Today's daf in Masechet Eruvin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Samach Dalet. And the last thing that we learned, we were dealing with the issue of having a nochri in your chatzar who didn't want to rent out his space, and we came up with an etzah. The etzah was one person should ingratiate himself with that guy and then ask him if he can, like, leave his lawnmower in his garage and so on. At that point, he would have a din of lakito. A lakito is like a picker, you know, like we say today, an itinerant picker. So basically, if the guy hires an itinerant picker, he lets him sleep in the garage at night or whatever, you know. So the same thing is true. This guy would have a din of an itinerant. And because of that, he could then actually give the Erev on behalf of the guy because he's a member of the guy's household. And therefore, he would cut around the takana that the Chachamim made in order to enable you to carry. That was what we had last learned. And we got up to Omar le Abaya le Rav Yosef is where we were up to. Okay, so that's seven lines down. So Abaya asked Rav Yosef, how about if you've got Jews that are working there, and he's got like five of these guys, you know, and maybe he has five sechirot, five lekitot. So would they themselves give it a din of a chotzer that each person has like a separate house in? Because to one guy, he gave the garage to sleep in, and to another guy, he's got a back room, and so on and so forth. So each one of these people, by having the rights to live in the guy's house in the chotzer, then would aser as a Jew to the other people in the chotzer if he doesn't give an Erev for his own. So what would be the din? So he said to him, what are you kidding? Imam Ruz Chirov Likito Lahakelak. The Sol Halacha that we came up with was brilliant, that we could be Mekel by treating the guy and allowing him to bring an Erev for the guy. That's a tremendous kula. Remember that when it comes to Erevin, we are looking for kulas. You're going to say now that we should be machadish, that a guy who happens to be living in a garage is considered to be an actual dayar in the chotzer? Because, I mean, look, this guy, the whole point of being a lakito, when we say, even today, when we use the word picker, we use the word picker to mean a guy who basically, you know, he's here today, gone tomorrow. I mean, if they don't need him for picking, then he's finished. If they don't like him, whatever, they throw him out. That's not considered to be a permanent dayar. So we're certainly not going to make it a chumra that he could create isurim in the mavut. That doesn't make any gufa. So what we said before, that you can actually use the sechir and the lakit to give the erev for the goy, that was said over in front of Rav Nachman. So afilu sechiro, afilu lakito, no teni ruvo v'dayo, and that would be good. Omer Rav Nachman, wow, I love that. Come on, Ma'ayashmai, this is beautiful. What a beautiful point. Really good insight. Then they quoted something else in front of Rav Nachman. Omer Rav Nachman. And there, Reb Nachman did not like what it was that he said. Namely, Shata Revi'it Yayin Al Yore. That if a guy drinks one revius of wine, he's not allowed to give a pshat, a psak halacha. We were talking until now about piske halachas in front of the Rebbe. Now, we've happened to just tangentially, very strangely, getting back to the idea of piske halachas. This time, in front of Rebbe, so to speak, Melech Malchei Hamlochim Rebbe, and not having your das properly formed when you're giving this psak halacha. So in that case, you shouldn't be paskening. Fine, that's what Shmuel said. Reb Nachman hears this, and Reb Nachman says, that's not beautiful. That was the first thing was beautiful. This one's not nice. I don't like that at all. Because as far as I'm concerned, if I don't have a little shot of Talisker in the morning, I can't even have a straight ahead. I mean, I'm supposed to give a psak halacha. So how could they say if you're a little bit high, you shouldn't give a psak? That's the only way to give a psak, man. I don't like this pshat. So Rava, who did not like the way that couldn't tell Reb Nachman, but he asked Reb Nachman from the beautiful halacha. It's also, remember, we've seen a pattern throughout the parak over here. The way the Gemara takes for granted that the nature of intimate relationships are very similar to the nature of learning Torah, right? So the idea over here, says Rava, this is such a beautiful halacha. You shouldn't use that language. I mean, why are you talking like that? This one's beautiful. This one isn't beautiful. I mean, what are we doing over here? What are you, a pimp? Like you're talking about, oh, yeah, I got this is beautiful. She's beautiful. She's not beautiful. This is terrible. You're not allowed to do that. Omer Avacha Bar Chanina. What is the meaning of this strange pasuk? V'ro'eh zonot ya'bed hon. That's crazy. If you want to lose your money, become a pimp. Who becomes a pimp? Why would you lose your money? What exactly is going on over here? So we're darshing it beautiful. Ro'ez zonot means you say ze na'ev ze lo na'ev, right? Zonot. So in other words, you're saying, oh, what a beautiful pshat. Not a beautiful pshat. So that's basically, but you're looking at Divrei Torah, all these beautiful, beautiful girls. You're saying, hey, here's a beautiful one. Here's a not beautiful one. That just sounds exactly like a pimp. And if you do that, kola omer shmoa zona ava zoina na'a, so you are going to abed honashel Torah. You're going to end up forgetting the Torah because you are cheapening it. And when you cheapen something, you end up losing it. And therefore, it wasn't the right way to talk, even if you disagree. Oh, my labor, Nach says, you're right. I'm sorry. Change my mind. Never mind. Cross that. I didn't say it. Hi, Drevi. Anyway, so now it turns out we got to talking about, this is really, really a fascinating thing, right? Because think about how we got into this sugya, guys. It's really unbelievable. So we got into the sugya by talking about someone who's mora halacha b'fnei rabo, right? So mora halacha b'fnei rabo, we brought a raya from whom? Nodavaviyu, that they died only because they were mora halacha b'fnei Moshe Rabbeinu. But what is the other pshat in Nodavaviyu? That they were shesuyei yayin. So the next sugya is shesuyayin should not be mora halacha, right? Then we get into the question of whether a shasu yayin is able to be nichnas l'migdash, so to speak, which is to be Eved Hashem, which is to be mispal. So the next sugya is, can a shasu yayin say tefillah, say shmona esrei? Is he allowed to be mispal? So Omar Rabba Bar Rav Huna, shatui al yitpalel. If you drank wine, now shatui means you're a little high, as opposed to shikor. You are not, it's interesting that in English, shatui, the word shatui, drunk, means literally shatui, having had a drink, drunk, right? So shatui, but by us, it's not true. Shatui means having any level of drink, and we're going to define, and shikor, but literally intoxicated, that not. Shikor, you cannot daven. And if you did daven, tefillah totoeva, and you're going to have to say that tefillah over again. So if you were just high, you shouldn't l'chatchila be mispalo. But if you did, tefillah totoeva, you don't have to make up for that tefillah. What is each one of those considered to be? Hechidami shatui, vehechidami shikor. So at what point are you lahalocha considered to be shikor, intoxicated? Ki yadu rebaba bar shumni v'menashe bar yirmiyah mejifti, were once at the, they were sitting there, they had just crossed over on the ferry of the Nahar Yufti, and they were about to say goodbye to each other, and they wanted very much to preserve the moment, and the way to preserve a moment of relationship with someone is to be nifrad mitoch divrei Torah, as we've learned. So if somebody is nifrad mitoch divrei Torah, we had this in Brochas, mitoch kach zochreyu. So they said, look, you know what we'll do? Every one of us will say to the other something that he never heard before. That way he'll remember him. Shemitoch kach zochreyu. The Omar Mori Baravuna, lo yipater adam yichaveron, lo mitoch dvar halacha. Shemitoch kach zochro. So the first one said, hechidami shatui vehechidami shikor. The definition of just being high is that he's yochol daber lifnei hamelech. So that if, let's say, he needed to talk in front of a king, he would be able to put on his mind properly, not to say something wrong. So then he's considered to be only shatui. If he's shikor, then he can't be trusted to speak in front of the melech because he loses judgment and will say something inappropriate. So if you're in that kind of state, then it's a tefillah, so to'eva, and you'll have to repeat your tefillah. If you're able to concentrate sufficiently that you'd be able to speak with Nehamelech, So then it's not a toiva, because you would speak also lifnei amelech. This way you shouldn't, obviously. It's the last thing you want to do is to be high when, like, all of a sudden you're called in front of the king. But it's possible to do. Now, it's interesting that this is one of those halachas that doesn't apply bizman hazeh, although when it says it doesn't apply bizman hazeh, it's obviously a little bit of an individual decision. But the idea over there is the Mishnah Berurah says, look, anyway, people aren't mechavin for their tefillah. So to put off a tefillah because you're high, and because of that, perhaps missing also zman tefillah. Nowadays, we don't do that because anyway, nobody has kavana for anything. So what's the difference? Okay. I mean, it's one of those halachas. It's not 100% so clear because bishlama, the other things, let's say, we don't repeat Shmona Esrei if you didn't have kavana. Why? Because we figure the next time you repeat, you won't have kavana either. That makes sense. But if the halacha, the basis of the halacha is not kavana particularly, the basis of the halacha is mashma from your yochel adaber lifnei hamelech, is the question of the appropriateness of how much your das is appropriate. It could be that that includes elements other than kavana. It could be it includes aspects of appropriateness and fear of breakdown of your mind and so on. Okay, so, but anyway, that's how the Mishnah Berurah paskens. The other one said, I'll tell you my chiddush that I think you never heard before. Suppose somebody like gets a sudden windfall, wins the lottery. You know what happens when people win the lottery? Their lives fall apart. This happens all the time. You look it up. It's like a frightening thing. That's why people want to keep winning the lottery. I mean, besides the IRS who gets after them, and all of the neighbors suddenly get after them. All of the cousins that they never knew get after them. And people, bichlal, give them a tremendous amount of ayin hara and hassle and so on. And they end up getting their family relationships break down and so on. It's terrible. So what should you do if chas v'shalom you win the lottery, says the Gemara? I'll tell you what to do. And how would you do? There's a number of ways that you could win the lottery. First of all, you could be zocha in the nichsei ager. If somebody finds a ger who was misgayer when he was older and he didn't have any children as a ger, so he has no heirs. And you happen to be the next door neighbor and this guy drops dead and all of a sudden you go and you take over everything he owns because it's hefker, because there's no yorish. So everybody, oh my God, this guy's walking away with his house and with everything and he didn't do anything to deserve it. So what did you do? Maya asevit kamubi ado, yikach mehem sefer Torah. So if you buy a Sefer Torah, I mean, what are people going to say? You know, okay, he gave it all away to charity. He bought a Sefer Torah, gave the Sefer Torah to the Beit HaKnesset, you know. Oh, on the contrary, he's such a nice guy. Okay, so now that helps for the IRS too, because if he gives it to the Beit HaKnesset, so you can take it as a tax deduction. Anyway, so that would be the best answer. Omer of Sheshes, this doesn't only mean a straight out, like, windfall. I mean, even if a guy marries a rich wife, right? So there's a Baal B'Nichse Ishto. The guy gets rich by marrying this rich woman. Okay, so also, I mean, listen, you can't say that's for free. I mean, it's heavy duty. Marrying a rich woman is heavy duty costs. But anyway, but still people are going to talk about it, right? So even for that, Robert says, look, it doesn't have to be a windfall. I mean, if you do well on the stock market, right? So you made a good investment. You run into the same problems. Even if you did that, afilo avad iske v'rovach, you have to be careful. Rav Papa said, even if you found something in the street, like you found a wallet, you know, all of a sudden you pick up 10,000 bucks in the street, that's also, anything like that attracts attention. And Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says, look, I mean, you don't need to buy a Sefer Torah. I mean, that's really going pretty far. I mean, a Sefer Torah is very expensive, and a Sefer Torah is bedavka, something that's going to be used by the tzibur. It doesn't mean that you have to use all the money. It means people should know that you're, let's say, you picked up a lot of money. Go out and buy a new pair of tefillin. Nobody else is going to be nene from that but you, but it already makes people look at it as being, this is what the guy does with his extra money. He picks up extra mitzvahs, it becomes more machmer on mitzvahs. Fine, that's also enough. The Omer of Chanan, the Tamer Rabbi Chanina, where do we see this in the Pasuk? The Klal Yisrael was actually sensitive to the idea of what would be if they make a windfall. Because it says, Vayidor Yisrael neder Lashem, this was by the Milchemes Arad, when Avram HaKohen was Nifter. So it says over there that they were attacked because the Anani HaKavod were Mistalik. So they made a neder and they said, Im naton titenet amazeh biyadi v'acharamti et oreihem. I will take the money and everything that I have, I'm going to give to the Beis HaMikdash. So you see that even in advance, the fact that if you would have won the war, you would have had this windfall of things that you won in the war, that would be a reason for you not to win the war. Because already it's like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, you know, well, Midas HaDin is, you know, Ayin Hara, what they really deserve to get on. Therefore, they made the neder in advance. You should know, we're not looking to take anything for ourselves. We'll give it all to the Beis HaMikdash. So it's not, because it's a very strange neder to make, right? I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be told, let us win the war, and that way we'll give the money to the Beis HaMikdash. That's ridiculous. How could the Pasuk mean that? Like, the Beis HaMikdash needs the money, so let, you know, we'll win the war and we'll get money. That can't be what it means. So, and what are you looking for? You're looking for like a schus in advance before you win it. I mean, it's a great deal. Give me all this money and then I'll give the money to the Beis HaMikdash. Right? So, how does that work? The only way to understand the Pasuk, it's such a brilliant insight into the Pasuk, is that the fact that I would have won the war would already have been my schus to win the war because of the money that I made in the war. So, therefore, I'm telling you up front, I'm not making money in the war. I'm going to use the money for the Beis HaMikdash. That's the point. It's an unbelievable insight into the Pasuk. And that's the only way really to understand it. It should make sense. So, Mamela, we can build on this Pasuk, this idea that a person should recognize that that type of windfall, Lamais is an Ayin Hara in terms of Pesach Din for him and his Parnasa, and therefore he has to use it for something. Marvelous. This is marvelous. Because always, I mean, the Pasuk is a very disturbing, this Pasuk. If you let me win the war, then I'll take the money that you give me for winning the war, and I'll give it. Thank you very much. Amar Rami Bar Abba. Okay, anyway, so getting back to this idea of what to do if you had some wine. So is there a way that you'd be able to daven? Like, how long exactly do you wait? So Rami Bar Abba says, look, the idea over here is that derech mil v'sheina kolshu, if you travel for one meal, which is about 1 kilometer, or if you sleep a little bit, even a little bit, that's mefigim et hayayin, and at that point you would be allowed to daven, you would be allowed to give a psak halacha. Omer Nachman, Omer Rabba Baravua. This is only if you drank exactly a revias. If you drank a revias, that's true. But if you drank a lot, meaning you drank more than revias, then it's even worse. If you start to travel, so then it'll get you even more confused. Because you get the blood, you're going to get the alcohol through your bloodstream. And if you go to sleep based on the alcohol in your bloodstream, you're going to get even more confused. And that's not going to help. And over there, the Sheina Mishakarto, you'll wake up in a daze, and it'll be even worse. So for sure you won't be able to daven, and for sure you won't be able to give a psak halacha. Wait a minute. You're telling me that just if it is a revias, or just traveling one meal, so you're saying that would be enough? What about the story that we learned in a brisa? Maisa Reb Gamliel. So Reb Gamliel was riding on this donkey, and he was traveling from Akko to Gziv, and Rabbi Eloi was walking behind him, and they were walking along, and Rabbi Gamliel sees there's challahs of bread on the road, so he says to Rabbi Eloi, Eloi, pick up those challahs from the derech. You're not allowed to leave challahs on the road. The Gemara is going to afterwards go through the various halakhas that we learn out from the words of Rabbi Gamliel. Anyway, so Rabbi Eloi is holding these challahs, they're traveling, and they bump into this goy who's walking along the road. So Rabbi Gamliel says to the goy, hey, Mavgai, take the challahs from Eloi, will you? And enjoy them. Okay, so Rabbi Eloi was like very curious. What the heck? He meets this goy on the road and calls him Mavgai, like my old friend. I'm like, what? So he strikes up a conversation with Mavgai, right? So he says, yeah, where do you come from? Yeah, he says, I come from a trailer park in this area. Really? Well, what's your name? He says, my name is Mavgai. So he says, so you know Rabbi Gamliel? Never saw him in my life. So at that point, we learned, says Rabbi Eloi, that Rabbi Gamliel obviously goes around with Ruach HaKodesh. That's what he meets a guy in the street. Hey, Mavgai, enjoy the challahs that you take from Eloi. Okay, fine. So Baotar Shalom, Adnot, and Rabbi Gamliel was mechaving Baruch HaKadosh. Okay, but meanwhile, there were three things, lahalacha, that we learned at that point. I mean, Tosus points out that, you know, it would be sort of the same as a goy meeting a Jew and saying, hey, Haimi, pick up. I mean, there are lots of guys were called Mavgais. So maybe that's all he was saying. You know, hey, Mavgai. Hey, George, take it, you know. I mean, it's that big riot, the Ruach HaKodesh. Okay, this just doesn't really answer it. But he just points out that, look, you know, but still the fact that he would say it, you know, so, okay. Anyway, but the three important things that we learn are not about Ruach HaKodesh, but are Lahalach. So first of all, we learn from the fact that he insisted Rabbi Elisha pick up this bread. You see that you're not allowed to just walk by food that's lying on the ground and not be mechabed the oichlin. You have to pick it up, that it shouldn't be lying on the ground. So lemadnu she'in ma'avirin al oichlin. That's number one. Furthermore, why would Rabbi Loi insist that, why would Rabbi Gamliel insist that Rabbi Loi himself can't eat the bread? He's got to give it away. So obviously he held that since rov ovrei drachim were goyim, so memela, you weren't allowed to eat pasakom. And therefore, he told him he shouldn't eat it, but he should pick it up. What's the chiddush in that? That we go basarov? No, the chiddush in that is that he didn't care about the cities that he was traveling between, which were cities of Jews. And over there, there wasn't a rov. And remember, we always have this question of rov v'korov. What's odif, the rov or the korov? He was possibly we go basarov. Fine. And the third thing that we learn is that since afterwards, he told Mavgai, enjoy the challah. So obviously, that's going to create a situation of hakaras teva. You're not allowed to do favors for people because there's no such thing as doing a favor. A favor always creates a indebtedness. That indebtedness is a hana that you have. And because of that, if this was right after Pesach, and if the chometz that was made by this goy would have been usher b'ana because of chometz shavar lav Pesach, then he wouldn't have told Rabbi Loi to give it to Mavka. Because it would have been usher. He would have had to put it somewhere where it would have been okay to dispose of the bread, but he wasn't able to give it as a gift, even to a goy. So you see from there that chimtze shel nochri is mutter b'ana achra Pesach, as opposed to the chometz that would have been made by a Jew. If l'maisa the bread would have been made by a Jew, he would have assumed that, of course, it was a chometz shavar lav Pesach, and then he made an after Pesach. Okay. Anyway, continuing on the story, so Kivanchi Gia Lechziv, when he came to the town of Kziv, and he said, you know, okay, well, that's where he was going. So somebody comes along and asks that he should be Matir Ned. So Rabbi Gamliel asks Rabbi Loi, who was with him, tell me, did we have a full revius of Yain Italki when we sat down to that good Italian wine? And he said, yeah, we had a revius. So he says to the guy, he says to Rabbi Loi, let this guy walk behind us until that wine is gone, and then I'll be able to concentrate on his netter. Okay, so he continues to walk after them for three mil, not for one mil. And then finally, when they arrived at Sulma Shel Tzor, Rabbi Gamliel says, okay, now I can be mad to your netter. So Rabbi Gamliel gets off of his donkey, puts on his talis, and he sits down and he's matir the guy's neder. So there are a lot of things that we learn out from this. I mean, the way that he acted. First of all, you see from here that he was just concerned if they had a revius. If they had a revius, he held that you weren't allowed to give a psak halach. Okay, so that shows that one revius of Yain Italki is mishake. First of all, that's first. Second of all, we learned that that meant that he couldn't be more. So it's mishaker. And even that state of shichur means that you can't give halacha even heter nedor. Third thing we learned is that traveling, because Rabbi Gamliel said, let him walk after us as we travel, that traveling is mefigat hayayin. Fourth thing we learn is that when you're made for a neder, you can't be on the back of a chamor, you can't be standing, you can't be walking, you have to actually sit down, the way that he did. So he put on his talis, he sits down. But anyway, what's important to us is that over here, he said three mil. And only then did he feel capable of giving him a psak halacha. And you said that even one meal of traveling is the something that allows you to give a psak halacha. Okay, but that may be different. I mean, remember he specifically asked, did we have some of that good Italian wine? I mean, good Italian wine, you know, may be different. Maybe it's more powerful. Maybe it's mishaker tvei. So maybe there you need three meal. Says the Gemara, on the contrary, if it's Meshaker Tvei, didn't we say that traveling makes you even more confused? We said only if it's the normal level of a revias that's a b'shaker, then if you travel for one meal, it's going to help you. But if you add more, then if you travel, it's going to get you even crazier. So then over here, if you're telling, if it was normal wine and the same level of intoxication, so then why did you need three meals? According to you, one meal is enough. If it's more intoxicating, then three meals should make things worse, not better. Didn't you say, you get even more dazed by traveling. And if you go to sleep, you'll even wake up in a complete daze, so you'll be totally intoxicated. No, wait a second over there. We were talking about that idea. We were talking about walking. We weren't talking about driving. I mean, over here, look, there's two different effects. There's the mental effect, and then there's the physical effect. The physical effect of walking is going to get the alcohol throughout your system. You're going to feel tired. You're putting out a lot of energy. Your muscles are getting tired. And that itself is putting chemicals into your blood, and you're feeling even crazier, and you're getting tired, more tired. That's different. But there's another effect, and that effect is the psychological effect. And the psychological effect in which the more stimulus that you have, you're traveling along, you're seeing things and thinking about things and so on, that allows your mind to actually settle down. There's a completely different situation. So Rochuv is different. Oh, well, why did you say so? So if you're telling me that Rochuv is different, then the whole question isn't even a question. Because then the original question, which we were asking, Rami Bar Abba, how do you say one meal? Yeah, over here it was three meals. So then obviously there's a difference between walking and riding, isn't there? So we didn't have a question in the first place. So then the whole question falls apart. So then the Rami Bar Abba we could have said also, if you had exactly revias, then walking helps dissipate the effect of the alcohol by actually moving around and using up that energy and so on. And that's it, the end of the alcohol. If you got too much alcohol, then a meal is not going to help you. It's going to make you more confused. But he could have just said, Rochuv Shaini. Okay, anyway, this part about needing to sit down when you're being matir neder, is that really true? The Omer of Nachman, Mefirin Nedarim Bein Mahalech Bein Ma'omed Bein Rachuv. This is crazy because, I mean, here Rav Nachman is paskening that you can just be on the riding, you could be driving, you could be walking, standing, it doesn't make any difference. And here, take a look at this. He sits down, he wraps himself in the talit. I mean, I understand. How could you pasken that? Because it's a machlokas tanoim. But what is the Machlokas Tanoim? So understand clearly this is Machlokas Tanoim. We need to know that there are two different dinim in Hataras Nedarim. So one din is called Charata, and one din is called a Petach. Now, the din of Charata is that a person simply has changed his mind about making that neder. So what did I make a netter for? I need a netter. He's not happy at ever having made that netter. So then that's called, he's as charata on the ikar netter. Not that he has charata, oy vey, look, I got into trouble because of the netter. Because then he's happy that he made the netter. It's just that right now things aren't working out. That's not called charata. Charata is that he realized it was stupid to make the netter. Okay. Now, the other way is that if, in fact, things have worked out now, but the guy can't say, look, I mean, I can't tell you that I'm sorry I made the netter. I'm sorry that I have the netter. So then we need to find a petach. Need to find a petach means we need to actually be able to find a point which, if the person would have been aware of at the time that he made the netter, he would not have made the netter. And that would become, therefore, the equivalent of a charata. But that already requires concentration, it requires a theory of mind. We find that sometimes it could take hours to figure out exactly the type of thing where you understand that this is something that the person would himself, had he realized it at the time, he wouldn't have made it. And it can't be neilad, it can't be something that changed afterwards. It's complex. So therefore, now here is where the sugya is a bit complicated, because there's a big machlokas about how to use the following words. Potchin b'charata. The reason that potchin b'charata is weird is because it's using the word petach in a different way, usually, than the word petach is used. Because all over Shas, when it says potchin b'charata, as Tosfos explains, being upset with Rashi's pshat over here, the word potchin b'charata means, can you open the proceedings? Not, can you find the petach? Can you open the proceedings just with charata? So the fact is that a guy walks in and says, look, I'm sorry I ever made this neder. You're the chacham. You don't have to sit there and start analyzing. Does he really mean it? Is he mischarid on the ikara neder and so on? You could just matter the neder for him if he says he's ascharata that he ever made the neder. That's what potke b'charata means all over. Rashi here, for some reason, learns, because of his gears, it was at some reason. Rashi learns that potchin b'charata means you need to find a petach even if the guy is coming with charata. That's what it would mean. So you can't simply accept the fact that the guy says, I'm sorry I made the neder. You have to get him to say, had I known a particular point, that then I would not have made the neder. So that's makes a petach out of the charata. By the way, the halacha is that, in fact, potchin b'charata, the way Tosfos learns. However, it has become a minhag to turn the charata itself into a petach, which is fascinating. So now what we do nowadays is we say, after we figure out, okay, that the guy really means he's sorry he made the neder, to make sure that it's the ikr neder. So we say to him, look, if you would have realized that a year later, you would have been coming around and saying, oi, what stupid I was, I'm so sorry I made that neder. If you would have known it at the time, would you have made the neder? I said, well, no, of course not. I'm telling you, I'm sorry I made the neder anyway, you idiot. But anyway, that's called turning the charata into a petach. Okay, so we do that also. So the language is a little bit confusing over here, right? So Rashi learns potrim b'charata means literally, do we need to find a petach with the charata anyway? So if Rabbi Gamliel held that we do need to find a petach, the other gear says the exact opposite. Rabbi Gamliel held that ein potrim b'charata, and therefore you can't just go right into it by the fact that the guy tells you at charata. So because of that, he needed to analyze it and he had to sit down and so on. This is not to be confused by the third meaning of the same terminology, which is that we use the charata as a petach, which is a completely different idea that I mentioned to you at the end, right? Okay, so now that we have that straight, so it says the Gemara, look, it depends. There's a machlokes tanoim, the ikel amadiyomra potrim b'charata, the ikel amadiyomra ein potrim b'charata. So basically, according to this, if you could be potrim b'charata like Tosfos, or ein potrim b'charata, potrim b'charata directly, or ein potrim b'charata like Rashi, which means you don't need to find a petach if a guy has charata. So then Rabbi Gamliel held, no, that's not good enough. You do need to find a petach. So he had to sit down and he had to analyze it. Rabbi Nachman was following the shita that you don't need to find the petach, and that therefore Tosfos' lashon is you could just start right off with charata. So therefore, he said, what's the difference if you're driving? A guy says, I'm so sorry, I made a neder. Can you tell me it's mutter? Yep, it's mutter. Okay, thank you. And that's all. The Amar Rabba Bar Bachana Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So obviously, if this is what happened, you see that he felt that you needed a petach. What was the petach that Rabbi Gamliel found for that guy at Kesiv? I can tell you the story. He told him the pasuk, Yesh boteh kemat kirot charev, ulushon chachamim marpeh. There's people who open up their fat mouths and might as well have stabbed somebody with a sword, meaning they really screw themselves up because they have to open their fat mouth to make a neder. Who asked them to make a neder? But thank heavens that the lushon of chachamim, who will tell you that it's mutter, that is the way in which you can cure the stab wound that you created with your neder. So he asked the guy, if you would have realized that a guy is roy to be stabbed, he's roy ledokro b'chera because of this lashon. The guy opens up his fat mouth, he should be stabbed with a sword. So would you have made a neder? And the guy said, no, I wouldn't have made a neder. Fine. So that's what he used to be matur. Now, the mites, it's interesting that the Gemara in the Dorim says, we do not use that pasuk as a petach. Ever, because we're afraid that the guy will lie. We're going to ask him, so would you have made a neder if you would have known it was such a disgusting thing to do? Oh, no, of course not. No, of course not. Of course he would have. Okay, but he's not going to tell Rav Gamliel, I would have made it anyway, I'm such an idiot. So he would lie, so then it wouldn't have been a good, wouldn't have been a good petach anyway. But in any event, we see that definitely Rav Gamliel went out to find him a petach, right? Okay, you said before, Ein ma'avir ala ochlin. Om Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Yes, you're not allowed to leave a challah on the ground. That's true, but that was only bedorot harishonim. In the previous generations, where Ein benot Yisrael prutzot bakshafim, we didn't have to worry about kishuf. But lately, don't pick up a piece of bread on the ground, or a challah on the ground, as we'll see, because Bedorot Achronim, even the Jews are involved in kshafim, and you don't want to get involved in that. Leave it there. So they're ma'avirin. The same thing is true nowadays. You pick up a piece of bread to catch corona, leave it there. Those are the modern kshafim, right? So leave it there. Tana. The Brisa says, if it's a whole challah, then leave it there. If it's pieces, then nobody is going to infect pieces with kshafim. Obviously, today you can infect pieces with viruses. And Omar le Rav Asi le Rav Ashi, but that's not true. This says in a pasuk. You're telling me people don't do kishuf on crumbs of bread or on pieces of bread? It says beferish in Yecheskel. Over there, Yecheskel is talking about the way that they would use all types of kishuf in order to show as if the Baal was doing miracles. And that way they would get people to believe in Avodah Zarah. So you do this, and it says over there, you use little handfuls of barley and crumbs of bread. So apparently they did use little pieces of bread for kishuf. No, that doesn't mean that they made the kishuf on crumbs of bread. It means that for a few pieces of bread, meaning if you give this woman, Madam Kishuf's parlor, all you need to do is bring her in a sandwich and say, Madam Kishuf, could you please, in return for this beautiful sandwich, could you please get rid of my wife? So that would mean this was the fee. It wasn't that they actually used the sandwich for the kishuf. You need to use a whole challah for the kishuf.